The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Go through the session, feel what happens to you, use that, what you go through in therapy, and try and work out what's wrong with you, basically.
What's up, everyone? It's your boy, Danny Lopriori, and welcome to Off the Cuff. You might know me as the guy from The Basement Yard, Vine, the Lopriori podcast, and while I love to make people laugh, just know that I've struggled with my mental health for most of my life, just like many of you. Here on Off the Cuff, I will be talking with some of the most impactful influencers, athletes, celebrities, entrepreneurs, and mental health experts to have real, unapologetic conversations about mental health and breaking the stigma that surrounds it. This show is for you, and I'm so happy to have you here. Now, let's talk Off the Cuff.
Welcome back to Off the Cuff. I'm your host, Danny Lopriori, and today I am joined by food content creator and the man behind Brunch Boys, Jeremy Jacobowitz. Jeremy, how you doing today, sir?
Good. It's a beautiful day here in New York City, so I'll take it.
That it is. I thought it was supposed to rain today, but it actually ended up not raining.
It rained for like 5 minutes. It's a very weird rain, but otherwise it's like a perfect spring day. We don't have too many of those, so you know, I'll enjoy this one.
Give me both. I'll take it. So I have to say, I was watching your Instagram earlier. Have you always like kind of been obsessed with food?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, like, I never put it together that it was like anything different than anybody else, but I certainly like grew up with food. Like the first solid food I ate was like Chinese food. And growing up, I always say like, my mom's a great cook. Like all my food passion, I guess, comes from her. And we always had a rule. It was basically like, I had to try everything. She'd always be like, well, you could spit it out if you don't like it, but you have to eat everything. So from a very young age, I would just expose everything and there's nothing I ever spit out. So I loved it eating. I remember watching all the old Iron Chef and Food Network stuff and whatever it was from when I was a kid, and then just learning to cook just because I was hungry. I never thought about doing it as a career or anything, just because I didn't, back in this, you know, the 90s, 2000s, whatever, like certainly there are no influencers or content creators or anything like that. But even looking at like the landscape of like what job you could have with food, it was kind of like chef, and I didn't really want to be a chef. So I never thought about it until I kind of fell into it.
Are you born and raised in New York?
Yeah. So I was born in Brooklyn and then I grew up Westchester, then came back for NYU. I've never lived anywhere else.
So I have to ask, you used to be 100 pounds heavier than you are now.
Basically.
What was your highest weight?
I don't know, because I didn't weigh myself, but I certainly just always had like a number in my head that it was like around 290 or so, just from going to a doctor or something. Yeah. But yeah, so that was always sort of like the highest point that I remember, sort of took it from there when like I went through my weight loss. I'm like, okay, that sort of makes sense.
Were you big in high school?
Yeah. I was big like throughout my entire life. And then I lost the weight when I was 24, maybe.
Yeah. See, like I'm 220 now. I was 270. I was up there. I was heavy. How tall are you though? I'm 5'9". So I was packing it.
I'm 6'4". So
you had a little more space to air it out, but 290 is heavy. 290 is heavy.
Yeah.
So you lost the weight like around like 10 years ago?
Yeah. A little over 10 years ago now. Yeah.
So you were heavy. You basically lose 100 pounds. When you're doing any of your food content, is like your weight at all like in your mind? I'm always like worried. I'm just saying like from my experience, I'm always worried about my weight. So I'm always thinking like, I want to enjoy these amazing foods, but like, I'm always worried about my weight. Does any of that like go through your mind at all when you're doing these amazing food videos? It
goes through my mind every second of every day. I mean, I'm just like, I always say like my approach to food, it's not the worst. I think like one of the happiest things I was able to do after I lost weight, basically I lost weight very quickly. I lost 80 pounds in like less than 6 months. And then took another year to lose 20. And then that 20 sort of fluctuated up and down a little bit, but it basically stayed there. It's not anything like, wasn't like a secret. It sounds like a secret because I don't remember the exact thing, but basically it was like, I went to a nutritionist and I went on an insanely strict diet of just like bars and shakes and chopped salads. And then I went to the gym every day and I didn't break it for 6 months. It's certainly not easy. And like whatever, everyone's body is different too, but that worked for me. But then coming out of that, like, you generally see two things when you lose that much weight, especially on something that's so strict like that. You see people that either can never have a healthy relationship with food again, which I obviously get, because you see what happens to your body when you essentially don't enjoy food for 6 months, or you see people just bounce right back to the weight. They're not able to find that happy medium. And I was able to luckily find a happy medium where, like, I went, this is so silly, I started working in food the second I basically lost 80 pounds. I was kind of thrown into the fire of, like, well, yeah, you kind of have to do this. So then day to day, it's a lot. Like, I always say, like, there's this difference between my content of, like, when I'm actually eating at a restaurant and, like, filming at a restaurant. And obviously it's all right. Video, but I approach it very much like I do when I used to work in food TV, which is, like, if I'm in the kitchen, this is like a shoot. So I don't use it as my meal. Like, okay, cool, I'm there filming a cheeseburger, but, like, this isn't lunch. I already ate lunch. This is just a prop in a video that I'm tasting, and I love food and right. I want to taste and I want to enjoy it. I don't need to finish an entire burger to tell the story and to enjoy the burger. So there's that. And then I basically make sure I work out every single day. And even the shoots I do, I probably film 3 videos a week. So it's really not that much. I'm just really good at stretching content and making new videos out of everything. And the fact that I post every day, people just assume that. But I tell everyone, right, like, watch my stories. Like, I literally eat the same things every single day and they're generally pretty healthy. So, like, I just push, like, balance. Like, yeah, I love all this, whatever you want to call that food, but I don't need to eat it every single meal, you know?
And right.
Like everything, like anything you do over and over again is be terrible for you. So, like, yeah, for eat sure. that fucking cheeseburger, but, like, I don't know, don't eat one every day.
yeah. That's going to be a rough go if you eat a cheeseburger every day, for sure. But you touched a little bit on it too. So you used to work in TV and TV production, right?
Yeah. So I worked in sports TV first and then food TV, like reality, but 99% food.
Did you like that gig at all, or was you just found it too stressful?
No, I loved it. I loved working in TV. I like that schedule. Like, yeah, it kills you mentally and physically, which it essentially did. But I loved it. I love being in TV. I love producing. I love traveling. I love being on set. I love creating. Like any job, there's hardships to it, especially, like, it's not really a lucrative position, especially where I was at as a, you know, low level producer. But I loved it. You know, the landscape just changed. You know, TV barely exists anymore. So in my mind, I'm basically still doing the same thing. I'm producing these shows. They just live on TikTok instead of Food Network.
No, for sure. Yeah. It's a great way to look at it too. Cause realistically, it's like, I don't think I've had a cable box for like 5 years.
I still love it. I watch news and sports all day too. So I pay for YouTube TV. Sure. So basically I have cable. I pay for every streaming app. I'm a lunatic, but, you know, I'm it's part of my job. I got to stay on top of everything.
That's what it is. It's part of your job. And we could turn it into a tax write-off at some point. That's just,
it's all business related. I agree.
When you were young, I was an anxious kid, like in high school, but I never really addressed it much as anxiety or depression, because we were kind of in that era where the stigma of mental health, it was like, if you had a problem, you were crazy. Right. And they would send you to, like, the resource room. Like, that's like what they did with us. You know, they just be like, oh, like, he has like depression, we'll put him in special ed or something. You know, that's like kind of how they did it. So I always kind of kept my stuff inside. When you were in high school, middle school, were you like a super anxious kid?
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff started when I was a toddler, basically. What changed was, like, in middle, I also have ADD, and, like, before it was cool, I had ADD. But so
in middle school,
they put me on, like, ADD medicine, and, like, basically my grades went from, like, D's to A's. So, like, I just generally don't like taking medicine. I just, like, I don't know. Even to this day, like, if I have a headache, I'm like, I don't need to take Advil. Like, I'll get over it. Who cares? Whatever. Unless I absolutely need it, I'll take it. Like you said, nothing was, like, truly defined back then. And I don't necessarily know if I exactly knew what I had. But then it was, like, approaching me, like, well, what if you try this other medicine for your other issues, whatever you want to call it. And I was basing my mind, I'm like, well, as much as I don't like taking medicine, this other medicine has seemed to help everything. Maybe I'll try this medicine. So I don't remember what the medicine was. It's too long ago. But some sort of antidepressant, whatever. I probably started taking in like sophomore year of high school. And then I took that to the end of college.
Oh, wow. 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 Yeah. No, that's pretty wild. Yeah. I couldn't even think about taking like an antidepressant medication in 10th grade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Barely put my contacts in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, couldn't even imagine. It's a responsibility to kind of deal with that stuff at a young age. I always feel like, even too, with like content creators, we have to kind of have this personality that's like going all the time. And people really only see like a certain aspect of our lives. Like, even with you, it's they see the food you're trying, but like they watch your story, they see that you're pretty conscious about like what you're putting in your body and stuff like that. When it comes to content, do you ever get burnt out?
Not really. I know it's like trendy for people to say. And I honestly, this is sort of my retort to that is like, I think that the original people that popped up, I've been doing this full time for like 8 years and it was not on purpose. Yeah. I've always posted things on the internet. I've had my YouTube channel for years and years and years. You wouldn't know that by the amount of followers I have on there, but whatever. This is my job. I like doing it. And it was always just like a place I could be more creative than I was in TV, just because it was all my ideas. And that was the whole point when I started posting stuff on Instagram. It was basically an extension of just other things I was making online. And then the Instagram took off like 8.5 years ago. And pretty much immediately people were like, wanted to pay me. And I didn't even know you could get paid by doing internet things. It just happens around me. So it wasn't like I was out there trying to be an influencer, out there trying to quit my job in TV or out there, any of those things. It was literally the approach then is still essentially the same approach now, which is like, I like creating videos. Like, I was just in Asia for 2 weeks and everyone's like, and I shot 50 videos and people are like, well, yeah, it's your job, but you don't have to do that. And I was like, yeah, but like, I'd be doing that anyway. Like, that's what I like doing. So I think it's a difference. You see the split of like, again, going back to my approaches, this is exactly what I've always been doing. I've always been creating content no matter what the platform is. So I don't feel creative burnout because I truly believe this is what I'm trying to do. I think you saw something else that happened the past couple of years from TikTok of like, you know, some kid was fucking 17 years old. And he just like made one video on TikTok and it blew up. And all of a sudden he has to be this person. And like, I feel bad for that person. I feel bad for them. They didn't really want to do that. They didn't want to be a content creator. They just wanted to make a fun little video. And now they're forced to shoot and edit and produce and be on camera and have some niche that maybe they're not even super interested in, but this is what they're known for. And they have to do it every single day. So like, I totally get why those people are creatively burnt out and they loathe it at some point. I don't feel that way at all. Like, certainly there's good days and bad days. And maybe one day I don't feel like working. I take the day off. It's fine. But generally, I'm excited to get back to it the next day.
You were on an antidepressant in 10th grade, right? So obviously there was probably some therapy there too. So you went to therapy early. And what was kind of your experience when you were young with therapy?
I was basically always forced to go to therapy, but I don't remember a lot of it. I believe by the time I was like actually on medicine, I was literally just had to go to get the prescriptions, but like it was definitely not a weekly thing or even monthly thing. It was like once every 3 months I had to show up just so someone could write a prescription for me to take this, because I was certainly diagnosed with it, but I had no interest in going there. So it was different therapists throughout, from being a child until the end of high school,
sure,
I guess college too. Someone was still writing the prescriptions. I cannot tell you who.
I remember those days too.
And it was harder back then. Nowadays, I think you could get prescriptions to anything. The internet didn't exist like that back then. So you literally had to go to a legit doctor or therapist or whatever.
I've said it many times on this show too, like how you said you had ADD before it was cool. I was like, guys, I was depressed before it was cool.
Right.
We're gatekeeping our depression in ADD. I always look at the food space as I associate food with happiness. I just am one of those people. Sadly, it's just something I've tried to work on, but I used to stress eat. Food used to be the only thing like I would look forward to in a day. So it's like, I have a love hate with food. But what you do is one of the best things that I think that happen on the internet, or when people are actually passionate about food, especially coming from New York City, there's endless things that you could enjoy here in New York City. For you right now, where's your go-to place to eat in New York?
The place that I've been loving the most is Edith's sandwich counter. It's very much like her approach is sort of like modern take on Jewish food and like not Israeli food, which I also love. But like, I always tell people, like, I'm not Israeli. I didn't grow up with that food. And even saying I grew up on Jewish food is like, I grew up in New York City food, but obviously like Jewish food is folded into that so much. And just everything is so unbelievably good. They're in Williamsburg. They just opened up a pop-up in Friday also. So they're spreading a little bit, but just great. And that's like my, like, yeah, like on the weekends, like I don't want to get off the couch. This is what I'm ordering in. I'm getting like the slushy. They make latke tots, which are great sandwiches and bagels. And yeah, it's fantastic.
How do you maintain your weight, man? How do you do? Are you still in the gym like crazy?
Yeah, I work out probably 6 days a week.
Good for you.
And I don't recommend this for everybody, but I do weigh myself every single day and I take a photo of it every single day. And that's only a certain type of person can do that. So please don't drive yourself crazy. But what I like looking at is trends, and I think trends help me. And I'm like, okay, like, what did I do this week? And what did it do to my body? Or what did I do day to day? And well, some days are good and some days are bad, and that's okay. But what's the median line on that? And sort of just keeping a track of that. I think that certainly helps me. And yeah, of course, like, if I don't get off the couch one day and order in three meals, like, yeah, the next day, like, my weight can fluctuate very easily. Just, I'm a 6'4 dude.
Right.
But okay, from one day to next is 5 pounds. Well, okay, you're going to have to work a little harder this week, but like, just work a little harder and you'll get it right off. It's fine. And I was able to have that day of indulgence and enjoy all that food and whatever, not stress over it, because I remembered to have that balance. Don't let it become every single day you don't get off the couch and order three meals in, but like, enjoy those days where you want to have it.
It's just so easy to get food here. That's horrible.
I can have anything. I can have anything at my door.
I've always said, like, you could get a newborn baby delivered like on DoorDash at 4 a.m. and it wouldn't be like outrageous in New York. The biggest thing I always love to see about like content creators and stuff like that is something that you touched on before, is that you're actually truly passionate about what you do. A lot of people, like you said, they get pigeonholed and they're not actually really passionate about what they do. Even with Brunch Boys, what's kind of your mission and kind of your goal with Brunch Boys as a brand, you know, you as a founder and creator of it? Where do you see yourself going with this?
Do this as long as possible before I have to go work for somebody else. I like making videos. I love
that answer so much.
I like making videos and I have fun with it. And I love this way of creating content. Like I always say, the difference of like in TV, which obviously is my background. If you have an idea for something, one, it'll never get made, so don't worry about it. But let's say it's an idea that could actually get made.
Yeah.
You think of this idea, and then you spend months on a pitch, and you spend months pitching, and then you spend months, whatever, whatever. Like, you're years out from idea to making it to air. In one day, I can have an idea, and tomorrow I could put it on the internet, and it'll probably be seen by more people than whoever would have seen it on that third-rate cable network that show would have ended up on. And I really like that. So it really like lets you be creative and lets you take chances. Cause like, whatever, who cares? Nobody watches it and everyone thinks that idea sucks. Okay. On to the next video. There's always a video the next day. So that I've been starting to take on outside, saying I don't want to work for anybody else. I have been starting to take on outside projects just because I've been lucky enough to be approached by projects that are really exciting for me to direct and be a part of. So I've been doing that and I get to be very picky about it just because I am pretty busy with my own content that I could kind of wait around and be like, oh, cool, that project is awesome. Yeah, let's take a week and let's do that. So that's really it. I think like being flexible with your content too. I think that's one of the reasons why like I've been able to do this full time for 8.5 years. Like I certainly know so many people that started with me that had the same opportunity to kind of stick with this. And they just were too rigid in their content and too rigid and whatever. And I get it. Like you do get stuck in your own ways, but that's cool. If you want to just like be super creative and make content, you're always free to do that. But if it is going to be your profession, you have to give in a little bit and you have to see what else is out there and you have to see what else is working because things change every single day on the internet. TikTok, there's another trend the next day. And it's like, I'm not saying you have to do trends because I generally hate trends, but I think that you can look to see why those trends work and try and bring that into your own content and just keep going. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like I'm 36 years old and I have 250,000 followers on TikTok. I think like the curve that really means it's like 10 million if I was 20. So I'll take that.
Right. Yeah. No, that's what it is. It's like I have 111K on there on TikTok. And I was like, listen, like, kind of lucky to have this at my age. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm not a 14-year-old boy like dancing around.
Exactly.
I'll take it. It's harder the older we get these kids to like us, man. It's tough.
There's a big disconnect, but I try really hard.
A great meeting ground is food, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody loves food, for the most part. Just a little bit, just like about growing up for you, though. You know, we grew up similar places. Was mental health, like, talked about in your house at all? It wasn't in mine.
Yeah, every second of every day, because I have an overbearing Jewish mother. So that's all we talked about. I didn't want to talk about it. So it was never a discussion, but it was certainly brought up enough.
Absolutely. Yeah. All my best friends are Jewish. I got to live vicariously through them and some of their moms. So I definitely,
I mean, I think it's certainly a different conversation than it is today and thought of very differently than it was today, but it certainly was, like I said, from the time that I was very, very, very young, I'd forced to go to different therapists or whatever. So it was certainly a topic of discussion.
Jews were kind of ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's generally more anxiety within the Jewish community. So maybe they thought about it sooner than other
places. Yeah. I was like, my friend Ben Gold has been in therapy since he was 8. So like all of this isn't new to him. You know what I mean? He's been there. It's so funny, man. So you had ketamine treatment.
Yes.
I got to know what ketamine treatment's like, because the only treatment that I knew of ketamine was doing it on a Sunday night because we couldn't find cocaine. What is ketamine treatment like, and how do you actually get into ketamine treatment?
Sure. So like I said, as much as I was sort of forced to go through therapy when I was younger, I hated it and never got anything out of it because I would go there and basically refuse to talk. But so in the fall, I decided to go to therapy as an adult, which is a very different decision because you were making an adult decision, not being forced to do anything. Mm-hmm. So very quickly, the conversation came up of like, well, do you want to go on antidepressants? Because clearly you're depressed and you have a lot of issues. And I was just against it. Again, going back to conversation of I don't generally like taking medicine. I also, you know, I don't want to say the medicine wasn't helpful. I think it certainly was in some circumstances, but certainly whatever I was on, I also hated. I think the reason why I stopped is I just thought it made me too weird. It's just the best way to, I don't know how else to put it. It just did.
Listen, it's different strokes for different folks. I take medication, but I understand why people don't take medication. I couldn't be someone that's going to completely write someone off because they don't want to take medication.
Right. Of course. Ever do your own thing.
That's outlandish.
But so my therapist was, luckily, she's very into like, okay, what else can we look into? And she was the one to suggest, well, maybe ketamine is a treatment. I looked into it, and there are a couple of reasons why I liked it. One, it wasn't something that you were dependent on. Like, as you know, once you go on antidepressants, you're literally dependent on them. You can't just stop, and you can't test it out. You can't just take it for a week and see how you feel. It really takes months to build up in your system. So it's kind of like, okay, I don't love that. Where ketamine, obviously I'm no expert, but at least I've gone through it. I do know it's literally just in your system while you're doing it. And then it's out of your system in 15 minutes. So I had never done it before. I don't really like drugs. They don't make me feel good. So I just don't really do them. I've never had a positive experience. But so I looked into it a little bit and like, you know, it's not just like a warehouse in Bushwick. Like they're professional medical facilities that administer it to you, which also made me feel better. I found this company and you can't just get it. I don't know exactly what all the rules are, but you can't just roll in and be like, hey, here's my credit card. Give me ketamine. One, you have to have someone that like basically, not that I had a prescription for my therapist, they can't do that. But my therapist had to recommend that this was for me. You have to be able to prove that you've tried antidepressants and they don't work. So if you've never gone antidepressants, they will not, at least the place that I went to, will not just administer ketamine. It's going to be the second option for you. They're basically like, hey, for first time people, like we have this package of 5 sessions. You do them all within basically 2.5 weeks of each other. You know, the idea is like go through the session, feel what happens to you, use that, what you go through in therapy and try and work out what's wrong with you basically. And my basic thing was like, well, what's the worst that could happen? That's what I want to know. And they're basically like the only, what they said and everything I read and everything I saw is basically the worst thing that could happen is that you just doesn't do anything. And I was like, okay, well, if that's the only negative, then I'm totally okay to try this. And that's basically what it was. Like I went through 5 sessions. I used it as a therapy. You know, they send me all these mood surveys every week of like these weird questions for them to determine their own math. So on their own math, it was a raging success because they went from some random score to some other random score. I've been telling people like, I think it was a positive experience. What I learned about it from going through it and speaking to other people, they really recommend this kind of treatment for people like PTSD. And having gone through it, I understand why, because it's funny when you said like, oh, do ketamine recreationally? Because like the thing that I went through, I would never fucking want to do this recreationally. I mean, they hook you up with an IV to a giant bag of it. So the dosage is obviously very different. But every time I went under, you're conscious. You're not asleep, but you are just high as shit. And someone's with you. It's all administered. They're checking you, whatever. And you could always, they also cover your eyes and your ears. So it's really fucks with you. But I also was able to stay conscious enough to be like, if I feel like I'm going too deep, which I certainly felt like it, I could always just peek out and I know I'm back in the office. But what's interesting is I thought that for every session I did, it constantly brought me to things that were like my biggest fears in life, always without me trying. And these are all things that I knew. So it wasn't like I had some breakthrough of like, oh, that's what it is. I was like, oh, I knew this. This is really fascinating. This is where it took me. Where if you're someone with PTSD, generally you're facing things that you do not want to face. Your brain might have erased it from your memory. And now you're going through ketamine and now it's brought you to that thing that you tried to get rid of. And because of that, you're facing it. You walk out of there with like tremendous success from it because the brain finally went to the place it needed to go. I don't have PTSD, thankfully. So it wasn't just like eye-opening thing. It was just like really fascinating. You know, like, oh, wow, it brought me there. That's interesting. It brought those things to therapy. What about that? Can we work through? So I thought it was successful. And like, yeah, did it cost me a few thousand dollars? Sure. I have terrible insurance. Anything I would have done would have cost a couple thousand dollars. Anytime you go to a doctor for anything. So like, yeah, it sounds expensive, but really when you put it up against normal cost of any sort of treatments, it really didn't seem that expensive.
Yeah, for sure. Deductibles in the healthcare system are laughable at this point.
Yeah.
You're spending a ton of money just to go, like, just to say hello to your doctor at this point.
Right.
But that's incredibly interesting. Cause that's what funny, like you said, like antidepressants takes a long time to build up. And I remember when they were like writing me a prescription for it, they were like, hey, like this might make you want to kill yourself. Like we kind of have to tell you that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, that makes no fucking sense. And then they were like, yeah, but we got a couple more. And they were like, yo, your dick might not work for a little bit. And then I was like, okay. I was like, this is supposed to make me less depressed. I'm going to have no dick and I'm going to want to kill myself. This sounds terrible.
And even stopping, like you can't just stop. Like that's a lot of it. Again, like if it works for you, I'm not saying, please don't take it as like, I'm saying, don't do it. If you need it, I'm saying for me for personally. Sure. I wanted to try and seek other options. And they basically said that like what they see generally is like the positive effects from it you see for like 6 months. And then you sort of come back and maybe you want to do a whole other 5-session round. Maybe you want to pop in whenever just to get one session. So I haven't gone back, but I'm not against it. I do keep thinking of like, maybe it makes sense to do one session here or there, kind of see where my brain takes me this time.
I was on a benzo for my panic disorder and getting off of that shit's a fucking nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
A nightmare. You feel like you're dying. So I'm back on a benzo now. I said, if I ever get off of this thing, I'm going inpatient. I said, I'm not doing that shit again. Wow. I'm telling you, it's fucking brutal. I was on 3 milligrams of Klonopin for about a year. And they were like, this is too high of a dose. Like, you got to like try and cut it back. So I got it down to 0.25 Klonopin. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, all right, so now we're going to try and like wean you off of the 0.25. Like, my body was like shutting down. I was so tired. I got sick. I felt like I was going to lose consciousness. You can have seizures going cold. I used to have a friend that was prescribed Xanax and he tried to quit it cold turkey. He ended up like having a seizure and was in the hospital for like 3 weeks. It's scary.
No idea about any of this. So I just stopped taking my medicine one day and didn't tell anyone, which is definitely not the way to do it. Thankfully, I honestly think what happened was that because I was just having people like someone write a prescription without really like diving into any of it was happening. My guess is because I was on the same dosage from when I was 12, by the time I was 24, I was probably so underdosed that like just getting off of that, thankfully didn't have any of the repercussions that you could easily see from doing that.
Yeah, I got to look more into this ketamine treatment. It sounds extremely interesting. See, we never did the liquid. We did it Hampton style where you put it in a microwave.
Well, that's what's funny is like, it's one of those things when you start thinking about it, all of a sudden you see it come up every single day, like in conversation. Yeah. So yeah. And then all of a sudden everyone I knew was fucking doing ketamine. And I was like, you guys do what? And then I was fascinated by it because I was like, wait, I know how I've been doing it. How do you do it? I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. One spray of this, one thing of that. And I wonder like, you just like feel whatever. Like I'm like 45 minutes of that thing in my arm.
I can't even imagine. Totally I different. Can't even imagine that. Did you ever like disassociate when you were in there?
In terms of
like, could you like feel yourself like above your body?
I mean, basically like not necessarily exactly like that, but like every time I went under, I felt like I was on a different planet. Like literally thought I was on another planet. I thought I was going back in time. Again, like the deeper you went, it gets scary, especially what it was making me confront was scary and being lost can be scary.
Yeah.
I also didn't want to forget anything. It's basically like dreaming, but you know, when you wake up, you remember that dream for half a second, then it's gone. That's wild. A lot of what happens when you come out of it is you're more conscious, so you generally remember more, but it's very easy to forget. So they actually recommend like have a journal, write down everything as soon as you get out of there. But what I started doing was trying, because I felt it going in and out of my system. Like I would felt going really, really, really deep, and I come out conscious a little bit and go really, really, really deep. So what I tried to do was map it out. I must have looked like a fucking lunatic to like the person sitting with me. Because what I tried to do was build a map in my head and repeat the stories over and over again so I could come out and remember. So I'd be sitting there like, okay, remember this happened? And then this happened?
Yeah.
And I would repeat it over and over and over and over again so I could come out of it, be like, okay,
yeah.
I digitally can see it. I remember it. And do I remember every last detail? No, that's impossible. But I've mapped out enough of where this journey was where I could write it in the journal. And I have this lunatic journal of me being high, my crazy high notes, like, because it's out of your system really quickly, which is also sort of like you basically end the session, they cut it off, and within 15 minutes, it's totally out of you. And like, you could still feel kind of weird and like they're like, yeah. No, don't drive, but like,
a little loopy.
I just went about my day, would go to the gym, I would do whatever, like, you're totally fine. So it was funny to like look back at my notes the next day of like, you know, the notes of a fucking madman.
Do you still read them from time to time? Just like, I have to go and just
no, think what I the mean, fuck I was you know what? About. It's that thing too of like, once you write them, it's ingrained in your brain a little bit more. So like, I remember what it was. It would be funny one day or you know, to go back and look. But for now, I basically remember.
Yeah, you're just going to have to like publish like ketamine memoirs. That'd be fucking hilarious.
They're not going to make sense to anybody unless you're under ketamine.
That's true. Diet fads, I want to ask you about diet fads. In your terms of diet fads, I'm going to ask you a couple of diet fads that you would be willing to try. Okay. Keto. Would you ever go keto? It's basically like no carbs at all. Basically.
It's like I'm going to have the same answer for all these. It's like, how long do I have to do this for? Like, yeah, like generally, like I think one thing that helps me is reducing carbs. So out of all of them,
yeah,
it doesn't sound so, you know, like that sounds right, like something that keto would work at least, you know?
All right. Keto sounds like it would work. Yeah. Vegetarian.
No, I don't want to do that.
Have you ever tried to go vegetarian ever? I tried to do it once.
I did Whole 30 once, which is basically cutting out everything. I didn't cut out all alcohol. I cut out beer and wine, but I kept tequila. Because I'm like, tequila is a plant and it's fine. And the only reason you can't drink under Whole 30 is because it started by people who are alcoholics. It was really hard. I mean, it's like everything. It's like, you just have to make every single meal for yourself. Like you can't eat at a restaurant if you're on Whole 30 because every single thing is going to have sugar and butter in it. It's like, that's what makes every single thing taste good. So it was hard. So I wouldn't recommend it. But I liked it as a reset. I like all these things. Again, at least the like time, I think like, if you're like, I need a little bit of a reset. If you want to do 1 week being keto to like just put yourself back in the right mindset, I think it's really helpful. I also think everyone's body is totally different. What works for me is going to work for you. So I would say like, try them out. Do a week keto and see how you feel. Do a week vegetarian. Maybe you had other underlying issues where like meat was killing you and like veggies great for you. You know, like you really never know what's going to help.
Cake or pie?
I guess pie. You can go savory at pie. So I'm going to cheat and say that.
That is true. That is true. You can't go savory with pie. I didn't think about that. Chinese or sushi?
So I'll say sushi only because I always say sushi is the one food that I can eat every single day and never get tired of it. Whereas as much as I love Chinese, and that's probably more my comfort food, if you have to eat Chinese more than one day in a row, like New York Chinese food is what I'm thinking of. You're going to hate it. You're going to hate it after let's say a week, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. Pizza or pasta?
Oh, pizza.
Easy. Pizza. What's your go-to pizza in New York?
I always say Joe's is the best. I think like if you want a real New York City slice experience, Joe's is going to be the best, even if it's not technically the best pizza. I think like it's everywhere. It is New York, defines New York. More recently, I've been eating Feeney a lot. They're in Williamsburg. Mm. It's more like Jersey style. It's pretty thin. Their best pies, just like the tomato pie, like there's not even any cheese on it. It's just like fantastic.
I love that. TikTok or Instagram?
Instagram. You know what's funny is as much as I'm like in the social media world, I really don't like scrolling on people I don't follow. Like I watch YouTube all day, I'm happy to like find people on YouTube that I don't know. Everyone else, like Instagram, I still use it because I want to see like what my friends are up to and what like people I want to support are up to. Like if I scroll on TikTok, it's like I literally scroll for maybe 2 minutes and I'm like, I'm out. Your algorithm is admittedly fucking great, but I just like, I don't want to sit here all day scrolling random things. Like I want to be a little bit more like, you know.
It's the truth. Yeah. It can weigh you down. It's almost like you have no control over what, you know, YouTube.
No. Yeah. At least YouTube.
If you like one video, yeah, you could take time in between videos. Yes. TikTok is just like, you have to take all this in and hold it all. And we don't care if you like it or not, basically, pretty much. Before I let you go, I have a couple more questions. First thing is, do you still deal with anxiety? And if you do, is it daily? Is it weekly? Do you have like, you know, a couple bad days here and there? What's your anxiety levels like now?
Oh, it's definitely daily. I would say a lot of it's social anxiety. So it's sort of like when I have to be put in these situations, I'm going to feel it. So like, yeah, day to day. I mean, listen, there are days I go days in a row of not leaving my apartment, basically. Like,
oh yeah,
I have a gym upstairs and whatever. And if I run downstairs to go get something, it doesn't really count. So I could kind of like, sure, in those days, I'm never facing it. So it doesn't matter. But obviously with my job, I constantly have to face it. Like I have to go to an event tonight after this. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have to deal with it, you know?
That exposure therapy, you know what I mean? It's kind of putting yourself out
there. I mean, I don't know. It's 36 years. I don't know if that's really going to work, but I just kind of know it's just, they're just things you have to do. Like, yeah, as nice as it is for me to never leave my apartment, I kind of have to, you know, do more. So I got to force myself to do it.
How do you feel about things like this? The Zoom and stuff, there's like stuff like this make you anxious? It makes me anxious from time to time. And I host the fucking show.
It doesn't make me anxious. I don't love it. I just don't like staring at the fucking computer. Like I did one like Zoom date during COVID and it was like, never again. I hate this. I hate this so much. Cause I also think like, I mean, I don't know if you like, you could say, or like I'm fidgeting with things. I'm constantly looking away. It's just like, that's how I get through this.
I've been playing with this pen this entire time.
Yeah. And like, this is so informal where like, that's fine. If you're on a date, it just looks like you're disinterested in the date.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, where if I'm at a bar with them, like that's a little bit normal. Like if you're at a bar, you're looking around, like there's stuff happening. You could, you know, look down your beer, could do whatever you, whatever it is. You can't, if you're like on a date on Zoom, like you're kind of just staring at each other, which is horrible. So I did one. Yeah. I was like, never again. Fuck that shit. I'll wait for the world to open up.
Yeah. How's dating going now, though? Now that it's outside. Are you looking to like date?
Yeah, I go on dates here and there. Like, I honestly just don't have the time or energy for them more than anything. So it's like, I go through waves sometimes. Like, yeah, let's go on a date. Let me find a date. Or I go weeks, or I'm like, I look at my calendar. I'm like, I don't even know when I would go on a date. So, it's fine. It is what it is.
Have you like have a hard time kind of just like balancing like work and like personal stuff? Or is it just more like, since what you love personally is kind of what you do professionally?
Yeah.
You kind of look at it that way.
It's good and bad. I mean, all is the same, which again is good and bad. Like, but there's no separation, you know, sure, which is why people, sure, you know, people all the time, like, oh, my dream is to like do what you do and be in, you know, have my own shit or whatever. And I'm like, that's great if that's your dream. I don't want to take away your dream. It's not for everybody. Like, I've never had a 9-to-5 job. In TV, I was always freelance. I was always fighting for work. Mm-hmm. I was always working a billion hours a day and whatever. And I get off in that. Like, I enjoy it. I think that suits my personality. Like, there's some people that would hate that, and that's totally fine. Like, some people, it's great to go to work and have separate, like, be done with work and separate and go have a life. I said it to someone the other day. I was like, they were like, I want to turn my passion into a career. And I'm like, that's not always the best idea, because then it kind of kills your passion. You know, like,
yeah.
I worked in sports TV because I love sports. I studied sports management. Like, I did that for a couple of years, and then like it killed my passion in sports.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, the one thing that I like got so much enjoyment out of, I turned into work, and now it's just work. So I'm always like, you want a job that you can make money at and you can be happy with and you can grow with. But if you truly have all these passions, like, find a job that just gives you flexibility. Have a 9-to-5 exists anymore, but generally have a 9-to-5. And then on the weekends, go do whatever you're passionate about and try and find the balance, rather than always thinking your job has to be what you're most passionate about in life.
I love that. You're back into sports now. What are your teams?
I've always been a Giants Yankees fan.
All right. You and me both. Love it.
Those are two. Yeah.
Beat up on the Mets tonight, hopefully. So before I let you go, this is just the foodie and me. Top three New York restaurants. Your top three.
All right, here's what I'll say. Here's the places. These are not the best restaurants in New York City. These are just the places that I eat at the most, and I love them, and they make me happy.
Got it.
I go to 12 Chairs all the time. I really love that. I said Edith's earlier. That's constantly in the rotation. And the third one, I'll say rule of thirds. I love rule of thirds.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then Carbone spicy rigatoni, overrated, underrated, slightly rated, nicely rated.
That here's what I'll say. I think the dish is great. I would say that I think like what I loved about Carbone is, listen, it's a stupid expensive meal. So go there on a special occasion. Don't just go there
for sure. Tonight.
It's such a New York vibe and New York experience that I walked away being like, hell yeah. I had like six Negronis. I had all this fucking food. The staff was amazing. The service was amazing. Ambiance was amazing. So yeah, like I did like that dish, but I walked away just loving that meal so much. And I feel like if that's what you got out of it, you're going to like enjoy it way more. I felt that way about Port Charles prime rib too. It's like, oh, this burger rocks, this sandwich rocks, this abs rocks. But the fact that it felt like such a New York thing, I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, special occasion. I'm okay dropping some money because it was the whole experience.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than focusing on that one dish.
Port Charles is like, it's up there for me. I mean, Carbone's up there for me too. I just went like 4 days ago. I've maybe eaten there 100 times.
I like am sick after there, but it's totally worth it.
I always have to take it. I've fallen asleep in the Uber maybe 94% of the time after exactly. I leave Carbone. Have you been to Teresi yet?
No, I haven't.
I've been. You should definitely go. It's fantastic. And the last question I ask is, are you happy today?
No. My birthday's coming up and I hate my birthday and it's just stressing me out.
Oh, man, you got birthday vibes. I think that started to happen to me after I turned 25.
Uh-huh.
I used to love my birthday before 25.
Yeah, I never really liked my birthday. 25 was actually the only birthday where like it hit me that I was old. So that one was probably the one that affected me the most. But in general, I just kind of know what's coming up. And like, nah, people start bothering me about it. I'm like, I don't want to do anything. Just let me be.
As much as I want to be like the center of attention with like stand up and stuff like that, when it comes to like birthdays, I'm good.
That's what I always say. Obviously, people think I'm just like an attention whore because like I'm an Instagram person, but like really not. I hate attention. I'll take attention when it's for something that I'm like proud of, which is like right. My work. I can't leave the apartment. And if I'm out in New York City, someone will come up to me and say hi because they recognize
right.
me.
Right. Yeah.
Which is great. I think it's crazy and it's amazing. It's so super sweet and every experience is great. And the fact that I live in New York City and people recognize you is crazy. And I like that. I'm like, oh, I'm being recognized because of my work. That's really cool. To be recognized because like it's just another day on the calendar and it's deemed your birthday and it's a special day. I'm like, what is this so stupid? Who cares?
Yeah, it's true. I think that's just the old curmudgeon in us though.
Yes.
You know what I mean? The older we get, the more curmudgeon-y I get, but I embrace it. I embrace my curmudgeon side. But you know, listen, Jacob, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and being so open with us and just letting us, you know, just know about your journey. But for anybody who's listening who hasn't heard of you, where can they all find you?
Great. Yeah. My videos live everywhere. Just search my name, Jeremy Jacobowitz, like Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. If you're older, you can go on Facebook and find me. If you're younger, you can go on Snapchat and find me. Wherever content lives, I will be.
I love it. And then, you know what? I'm proud of you as a Jewish man for keeping your real name and not going with a stage name.
You know, it's funny. I had one for like, if you go back and find videos from like, 15 years ago, for like a year, I did have a stage name.
What was your stage name?
I like that my name's alliteration and I didn't want to go too far. So it was Jeremy Jack. I just cut off Jeremy Jack. Oh, right. Just cut off the rest of my last name.
Nah, Jacobowitz hits.
Yeah. It was a different time.
Yeah. I hear you. Guys, you can find us too at 101 OTC. Please go check out Brunch Boys. Check out Jeremy on his pages as well. And Jeremy, like I said, if there's anything we could ever do for you here, we'd be more than willing to help you out, whatever it is that you need. But again, thank you so much for taking time to come on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining me on another episode of Off the Cuff, presented to you by 101 Life. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and send us some love with a review. And don't forget, we're all in this together and you're never alone. Peace. Entertainment.
Say goodbye.
goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree